On this episode of The Playbook, I have Sue Enquist, that's right, the John Wooden of softball, founder of One Softball, and of course, Hall of Fame softball coach. And we're going to talk about pressure and how not to put pressure on yourself and the best way to coach your children through transformative coaching. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have a legend with me. And this is so much fun for me because with entrepreneurs, I usually get people that are like under 30 years old and they don't even know what a legend means. Sue Enquist is a Hall of Famer for UCLA, both as a player and a coach. You also have One Softball, which you started as you retired. And also you teach.
Yes.
At UCLA in the graduate school.
Back on campus.
It's amazing. Well, this is about lessons and about playbook to success. So I can't imagine anyone, unless we could reincarnate John Wooden, that I'd rather have on here about teaching lessons. Because I'm sure to start, you probably inherited some of the pyramid of success into your teaching and coaching and playing capabilities.
Absolutely. He was a huge influence to me, especially when that transition occurred from being, I went to school there, assistant coach, co-head coach, and head coach. He became very close to me when I took over the program as a sole head coach and was really just a North Star for me during those times when you have to make those tough decisions.
Who had more national championships? Because I know you have so many.
Well, technically, as coaches, we both have 10, but he always likes to say I have more because I had one as a player.
That's
so
right.
Technically,
and he never had
11.
One as a player, that's for sure. Well, hopefully you live as long and as strong as John Wooden.
Oh, goodness sakes.
My favorite thing about the pyramid of success and UCLA in general is that I was blessed to help Andrew Luck, being in the sports agency business. Warren and I helped him through senior day into the draft, and we're up at Stanford for senior day on ESPN, and I'm waiting in the cafeteria of their sports cafeteria, and lo and behold, on the wall at Stanford was the pyramid of success. And I told Warren Moon, who obviously is my business partner, but also an icon to me, a mentor of mine because of what he has achieved on and off the field. I said, can you believe how powerful John Wooden is that their biggest competitor, or one of their biggest competitors, is putting the pyramid of success in their cafeteria for all their athletes to live by and to see. How did the pyramid or your philosophy help you? Because you're just a winner. I mean, if you look at the records, John Wooden, people, like you said, you have one more championship overall, and everyone knows John Wooden is the winningest coach of all time and the most dominant in a very competitive sport. You know, how did you, you know, quietly and silently, you know, maintain and then even exceed the expectations of what the Bruins consider that winning pyramid philosophy?
I think when you look at people that have sustained success, they have roadmaps that are markers to their success. And for me, I'm a product of my mother and father, my family. You know, I'm a daughter of a military father. My mom was a nurse. So I had this amazing combination of discipline, but also empathy and inspiration with my mom. When I got into coaching, I had another great mentor in Sharon Backus who really built the blueprint for UCLA softball. I was at UCLA softball before she got there. I was a freshman, entered in first scholarship at UCLA. My freshman year, we wore the men's track team practice t-shirts. We're
really?
Our game uniforms. And so that gives you an idea of how we
how
started.
Important.
Well, just how we started, right?
Yeah.
To be a part of a program that just transitioned into intercollegiate sport. When you have people around you that have great belief, regardless of what you think the standards need to be, you have to have cool uniforms, you have to have a great, you know, facility. We had none of that, but we had a person that came in and said, we're going to work super hard. We're going to be smart about our workload. We're going to be mentally tough. We're going to pay attention to how we do our work, and we'll let the results take care of themselves. And long story short, by the time I was a senior, we had developed a program that had really put together amazing people that happened to be softball players. And so that was my first formal introduction to watching how you build as a player. And then when I had the opportunity to assist her and actually build it out and sustain it, it always came back to who we were is always going to be greater than what we do. And we really put together, in my opinion, a very fundamentally sound technical program with a high standard of performance character skills and moral character skills with an accountability around it that really taught our student athletes that how you live your life outside the white lines is equally important to us as what you do inside the white lines, and set up standards that would uphold those values. And really for me, once we created that, it was more about sustaining our fundamentals but remaining relevant as each decade sport life changes, and to remain relevant.
It was amazing too, because there seems to be a collective consciousness that I've noticed at UCLA from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s. In fact, at one time, I think UCLA had more gold medals or more medals than entire countries.
Right.
Just an extraordinary place. And it wasn't just in men's sports. It was in women's sports and in all different genres of sports. It wasn't just the big four. I mean, it was an incredible consciousness that still is there today, but there is a transformational side of what you learned. And I want to get to that transformational side, because as you bridged from playing as a champion to coaching as a legendary champion into one softball,
right,
to empower others,
yes,
and to have a bigger purpose, a greater consciousness,
yes,
where did that idea come from? Because you could have easily, you live in Southern California.
Right.
You had an extraordinary career.
Right. And I'm a surfer, so I could have just gone to the
beach.
You're
born right by the beach, right?
Right?
In San Clemente.
Yes.
Yeah, you could have just surfed your way to heaven.
And yes.
Instead, you decide to take on a whole new project. What was the true impetus of starting One Softball?
Well, I appreciate you asking that, because a lot of people think coaches, one thing that we, I think, fall short of in the coaching industry is we should move on from our careers in coaching and be influencers and advocates for what we need to build in society overall. Coaches and athletes have an amazing platform to unify. And so part of the reason I would never burn out at UCLA, it was heaven. It was a place that inspired me to be better every single day as a person and as a player, and ultimately as a coach. And I got out of coaching because I was more curious about, could I help our sport of softball provide greater access to our champions through my platform and the people that are in my network? And so what I did, I said, I don't know anything about a business. I'm a coach. Yeah. I just had my own business with speaking, right? But that's yourself taking care of your business. This was going to be something where I'm going to reach out to the community. And I said, I know nothing about the pain points of youth softball. So I'm going to spend 3 to 4 years, I'm going to do all the research, and I'm going to interview all the moms and the dads and the daughters and the coaches that I can find and find out what the pain points are. So we interviewed over 20,000 families.
Do you finance that yourself?
I finance the whole thing. I finance all of One Softball.
Yep.
And I have an amazing team of volunteers and people that have made a commitment to be a part of One Softball. And one of the things I wanted to do was I didn't want to go and get a big sponsor and then they would want their content in there. And my goal was I wanted to be a vehicle for the youth sport family. What do you need? So we synthesized it down into three areas. The parents said overall, as a youth softball parent, we're kind of disorganized. We don't know who to trust because there aren't vehicles to find the vetted and verified information you need. For example, Path to College. How do you discern if you type in recruiting Path to College, you're going to get millions of results. How do you know what's vetted and verified? That's number one. Number two, the coaches, we got to remember youth coaches, that's just a dad or a mom that said, I'll help.
Right.
And so
With good intentions.
They don't have any education.
Right.
And so people's like, oh, well, you can go to the coaches convention. I don't know too many parents that have an extra $1,000 to go to a convention, fly to a convention, spend 3 days. So the coach needed education. And sadly, when we interviewed the student athlete, she needed more fun.
Oh, really?
She needed more inspiration. She needed less pressure. And so I said, from there, I'm going to go to my network and I'm going to interview all our champions that have succeeded over time, and not necessarily just in championships, but championship people that happen to coach softball from the youth side and the collegiate side. Multiple divisions, Division One, Division Two, Division Three, amazing people, doesn't matter the division. And I had them answer all the pain points. And then we put those videos and people are like, oh, what are you gonna do? You're gonna sell them? I'm like, nope, I'm giving it all away.
Of course.
So I'm just gonna put it on the website and that's where it is, onesoftball.com.
No, pressure is so interesting because as you described your experience as a player and a coach and what UCLA provided, it, you know, brought up a vision to me of, you know, extraordinary pressure that is self-imposed. But yet studying John Wooden and understanding, you know, my mission is to enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent, mm-hmm. without quit pursuit of my potential, which is, you know, an amalgamated form of that, the principles that I learned from John Wooden and the Pyramid to Success, being consistent and persistent. Where do you see, because I look at so many different sports, being a parent of three daughters and a son, and the pressure that is put on and where that comes from today, because it has changed and accelerated over the years. Where do you think that pressure comes from today for all student athletes? Where is it coming from?
Well, let's first talk about the pressure that it doesn't matter that you're an athlete. Let's first just talk about the pressure self-induced from a student, that their desire to achieve, number one, that's a human, kind of a human need, is I want to do well. That's number one. So it's self-induced is one. But what's happening now, because of the intersection of social media, what's happening in our society, this onslaught of information, that the student has to be on all the time. And if you're over 40, I really want to ask those adults that are over 40 that have children to listen more to your child. Just listen more. When they want to be heard, just listen, because they have so much information coming in. Plus, can you imagine growing up, the minute you wake up, you have to be on. Because you have to document everything you do. You have to document your bedroom, to document you ate two burritos.
Capture everything, right?
And I have to be happy. And that's what we're not paying attention to, is we're not providing an outlet for these students today in 2020. You know, my generation, we had lots of outlets. We'd go to the park, disappear for 6 hours.
Till the lights came on.
Till the lights came on. The student today doesn't have the outlet, and the parent can be the one that creates the conditions to allow that athlete to just breathe. For example, people always say, Coach, be specific. If you're a parent of a performing son or daughter, I don't care if it's a spelling bee, a play, art shows, or athletics, the car ride to the event and the car ride home. To the driver, put your hands at 10 and 2 on the wheel and close your lips. And enjoy the silence until they want to speak. But you know what we do in sport? Whoever's the leader in the family, they're going to start breaking it down. You know, in the second inning, the count was 0-2. What were you thinking in that? And all she wants to do is put her earbuds in and listen to Billie Eilish.
Yeah.
That's all she wants to do. So we've got to give our students a break, no matter what they're doing. And parents are in charge of creating the conditions for them to breathe. Simplify their life and breathe. And don't let your ultimate goals become theirs if they haven't bought into them.
Yeah, I love that. I learned as a parent of four, right? My children are not here for me. They just came through me, mm-hmm. to allow them to do that. One of the things that I think has gotten lost too in both female and male sports is, you know, when I played, there was just a simple concept. I remember a coach telling me, three things I want. One, what'd you learn? Two, did you do your best? And three, did you have fun? These are three simple things. I'm watching my 9-year-old play, and he's so detailed into an unbelievable amount of information, not just statistical information, but performance information that is, to me, almost overwhelming, where I'd rather see a 9-year-old keep his eye on the ball and swing through the top of it or something simple. But there's so many different practices and batting. It's just, as someone in the sports industry, I stay out of it because I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I don't want him to be overwhelmed because I'm overwhelmed. And he seems to handle it fairly well, and it's one of his better sports. So I don't want to get in his way. But as a parent, you know, I still, when I get in that car, I do talk. And I ask him three questions. You know, what did you learn today? Did you do your best? And did you have fun?
I love that, but I'm going to challenge you.
Yeah, please. Because that's okay. why I'm bringing it up.
You.
I just played.
I wanted to go play sport and escape. This is today in 2020. If I'm 9 or 12 or 28 years old and I play sport, it's an escape, those 2 hours. Whether it worked good or bad, that was my time. Now I'm in the car. I may be completely drained, and now you want to interview me.
Right.
Like, well, I'm going to challenge that. You. See, I'm going to challenge you as a parent.
I heard you say that. That's why I don't want to ask him
like,
anymore.
Let him breathe.
Just let him let talk.
Let him talk first.
Yeah, right.
Just get in the car, put your hands at 10 and 2, and just go, shut my lips. And then just see if he speaks first or she speaks first.
And if they don't, just let him be.
Let him breathe.
Yeah.
Don't ask. Don't interview him about now. He's got to formulate. Well, now I don't want to let my dad down.
Right.
So I better think of something positive because my right.
Right.
If I'm a child today, I am suffocating. I'm suffocating because of this over interest. And remember, now I'm receiving these questionnaires. I had a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
I had a 12-year-old, and she said to me, "This was a focus group. I'm so tired." Mm. And I said, "Tired of what?" Tired of shooting for a goal that's my parents. She's 12. She's 12.
Yeah. Wow, that makes me sad.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's not a minority. It's a very common thing. The parents get into it faster and deeper and longer than the student. Remember our goal as a youth coach. Number one goal of youth coach. Number one goal. You have one goal, youth coach. You have one goal. That when your season's over, they raise their hand and they say, I want to sign up for next year. That's it. Coach, she's 7. She doesn't need to learn how to hit the curveball. Don't worry about it. I don't care if you're 0-15. You create the conditions for them to have fun so they sign up the next year. In women, we're losing 67% of our women by the age of 13.
Because they're overwhelmed?
Because they're not having FUN.
Yeah.
So let's introduce the F word.
Yeah, nice.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, let's put it out there that it's not appropriate to be super fan because our kids are saying, I'm suffocating. You know, it's interesting. We have no formal training for parents on how to be a great sport parent.
Yeah, or parents in general.
Well, I mean, there's lots of books on parenting.
Oh, I see.
But there are very few books on how to be a great sport parent. And what's interesting is...
Maybe you should write that book.
Right? Monday through Friday, you have moms and dads that are doing amazing work around life insurance, health insurance, what kind of toothpaste to buy, you know, just discerning everything, car insurance. But then on the weekend, we just drop our kid off, our most prized possession, the local team, we don't really know anything about it. We don't have anything that's organized. You're not getting a quick one sheet on how to be a great sport parent. And I feel so sad. And that's why I said, I'm so curious about, can I make an impact on this? And that's why I literally said, this UCLA thing, I could never leave when I'm tired because I would never be tired. I loved UCLA as much the last day as I did the first day because I had amazing staff and amazing families that we recruited. I never had a J-O-B.
Yeah.
Never had a J-O-B. And I never left. So I know you speak to a lot of entrepreneurs. Like, don't ask me about a job interview. I never had one.
That's beautiful.
I never left UCLA.
And yet you're teaching there now.
I'm back on campus.
And yeah. It looks as if, you know, in your graduate program, you're going to move to the first transformational sports program.
Yes, a master's program from UCLA in transformative coaching. This is unprecedented, and I'm super excited to be a part of it.
Can you explain, on the Transformational Leadership Council, in a different respect for with Jack Canfield and Bob Proctor and all these incredible minds, I think I was nominated and placed on the council because of my sports background.
Yeah.
And they had no one else. And so I'm extremely intrigued by a transformation in sport. What exactly is the principles behind the program?
Right.
So, 'cause a lot of people don't understand transformational yes. thinking and thought.
Yes.
So to apply that to sports is even more complex.
Let me be very specific regarding sports.
Yeah.
So many of us have been brought up in an environment that's more transactional, where the leader of the team, the coach, is interested in just the result. So we're going to do everything based on just the result.
Which is winning,
yeah. Right. And in transactional coaching, it's very vertical. The communication structure is very vertical. There's one leader. The leader has the say, you know, put up, shut up mentality. And in transformative coaching, what we're trying to do is create the environment where the athlete group has a voice. The athletes have a voice in their development. In transformative coaching, we're going to say, you as a person is more important than the home runs I get. And so I'm going to create the conditions at practice every single day that you have a voice in. You are a part of our process of developing our training, our leadership, our competitive strategies, that it's more collaborative and it's driven by values. So the program has core values and you hold them accountable each week. A lot of people in sport love to say, oh, we have core values, and you know, here's our poster, the cat. It says, hang in there, right? Well, we went and did a retreat, and our team carried telephone poles, and now we think and be one. I'm not a big fan of one event that's going to transform me. I'm interested in building a program and building blueprints for people to realize, how do I have a collaborative voice with my staff? How do I include my assistants in my leadership as a head coach? How do I include all of my players? And you do that through feedback loops. Every single week, coaches, we should be asking our athletes, how can I, as your head coach, be better? Instead of like, shut up, put up, come on, we're better than that. And I'm going to be really candid. Early in my career, I was that person. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get it? Then I'll yell louder, right? But I think a lot of people, you know, we won. Now what I know as a leader, I wish I could go back, because I know I could have been so much better for my kids. Well, could we have won more? Probably. But it was more about making sure that they enjoy their time, create the conditions for fun to be a value. So there's such a big, to me, it's just a double standard. In sports, we love to talk about, we're a values-driven department, we're a values-driven university. And yet, I don't know about you, but I don't know too many coaches that are getting bonuses on, hey, they've got a really great culture. We're going to go and give you an extra $25,000 because you have an amazing culture. I don't know too many kids that are being recognized for competitive character of the year, and you are going to go to the Super Bowl. Yeah. Nope. We're going after the best kid athletically. And so society's created this issue where you can only be valued if you're physically the best one. And when is society going to say, we're going to value the best teammate, and we're going to tell you what that looks like every day, and we're going to reward it every day? Like, why can't we have a circle of confidence at the end of every practice? Takes 2 minutes. Hey, what did we do well today? Hey, Tasha, what did you see? Hey, Caitlin, what did you see? And they have a voice in recognizing our development and our success. And that is transformative in terms of their experience overall and for your overall experience as well.
That's amazing. And I'm running parallels as I get to the last question between entrepreneurship and obviously sport and utilizing One, the idea that in business, I always say I love the fact that our goal as a coach is just to get somebody to sign up for next year.
Yeah.
Well, in business, I tell people the number one piece of advice that I can give is stay in business, right. Meaning wake up every morning and just guarantee that you'll be here tomorrow.
Right.
And that's really, I think, one of the goals in coaching is make sure that the love of the sport, the fun of the sport, the education, the pursuit of their potential within the sport, and everyone has different potentials, as we know, is to be there tomorrow.
Right.
And to want to be there tomorrow as a player, as a coach, or a fan eventually through that own progression. And then two, this collaborative nature of value-based leadership. I wrote a book called Compassionate Capitalism based off of this. This company, people want to come here to be sports agents. And I have a great internship program. And they almost look funny the first day when I say, look, we're going to learn four things here. Gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration.
Beautiful.
If I teach you those four things, everything else will fall in place. You want to know how to be a sports agent? I'll tell you. Learn to get a client and keep a client. You can be a sports agent. But if you want to be successful, learn gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and effective communication, inspiration, connecting to that communication that inspires you and inspiring other people, elevating them to elevate themselves. Getting to the last question, though, we haven't really touched on you as a maverick and an icon within female sports. And I've been blessed, being 52 years old, to see an amazing, amazing growth and progression in female sports.
Yes.
And I love the fact, having three daughters, seeing them excel and learn the same way with similar opportunities that I was afforded when I was the same age as them. Not equal yet, but at least close enough where they're afforded the same opportunities that did not exist right. when I was 12 years old. Where are we going in the equality spectrum within sports? Because no matter what we do in sports, equality of opportunity is absolutely something that I see. I love esports. I own one of the biggest esports teams in the world, the best investment I've ever made. And the reason I invested is because it was the first sport. I just wish it would be more physical. But eventually, I think with AI, AR and VR, it will be more physical. But I love the fact it's the great equalizer. Like, millions and millions of people watch, play, and love this thing. I don't really get it as much as I am an investor, but it's the great equalizer. Like, I walked up, my son had a girl skin on his player, and I asked him, why'd you choose that one? Because it was the coolest one. And to me, my mind was like, we're getting somewhere here.
Yeah.
Where do you see us going with equality, and what advice would you give to my three daughters as far as pursuing that equality and to living a balanced life within the context of the difference between men and women?
Well, I first want to just echo your values are phenomenal. And I would tell your daughters that we're lucky to live in a country where we have a federal law that protects you for equal access and opportunity in Title IX. Number two, I would tell them that you have a strong and a weak voice every day. We all do. Strong voice says, oh, Susie, you can do it. You put in the work. Go for it. The weak voice says, no, you're not ready. You're not that good. She's throwing pretty hard today. But what they have to understand at a young age is both those voices will be a part of your life, your entire life. And what separates people that make it to their full potential and those that don't is they don't make that strong voice always get the last word in your conversation. Because your ability to be wary of things, that's how the body is actually built, is to let you know when that there's danger or the unknown. Tell your daughters every day it's okay to have fear. That's the biggest fallacy in championship play, is that people think, oh, Enquist got all those great athletes, they're fearless. I'm not a big person on confidence. I'm all about understanding your process, trusting your process, let the game take over on game day. We used to always say celebrate game day. It's good old softball with their party dress on, right?
I love that.
Tell your daughters that having fear is okay. What's not okay is to sit in that fear and to have that self-talk that passes through it. Well, how do you do that, coach? Imagine that they have that fear, that big biology test in 2 days. I want them to spend the next 2 days thinking about right when it's over. What are you going to do? You're going to run to the parking lot, get on the phone, talk to your friends. Then you're going to go down to the beach and you're going to go ahead and get some surfing. Go ahead and work that whole mindset after the event so your brain can start to see and visualize and start to get calm so you can love the anticipation to biology day.
I love that. And blending the strong and the weak voice is so important.
It's real.
Understand the ego-based consciousness to the truth consciousness, because the ego-based consciousness, that fear-based consciousness, will always exist. I joked around, someone asked me if I could have one invention in the world to change it, it would be to give an egoectomy.
And, yeah.
Right? Connect us all in peace and harmony.
One thing you can do on that is teach people to use your best friend advice. Have you ever thought about when you're talking to your friends, like you have all the right answers. You're super confident. You're projecting success. You're like, buddy, you got it. You're on it. I know. I trust you. Blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to yourself, so I always say use your best friend advice on yourself.
That's so good, because I, you know, am a business coach around the world with some key executives, and I'll sit there coaching, you know, this key executive, and I'm thinking in my head, wow, that's really good advice, dummy. Maybe you should,
right?
You should take it. Right?
I know.
It's the best friend advice.
Best friend advice.
Well, I am just honored that you are here, oh, Sue. And what an incredible interview. I'm more than happy. I think we should write that book together.
Yes.
And I'll collaborate and get some.
You heard it here. We're writing the book together.
Exactly.
My eyes are on you.
This is one that's needed.
I'll get my hooks in you, and I won't let go.
I can write a book like you can play softball. So
nice. I love it.
It's easy. Anyway, I have Hall of Famer, incredible entrepreneur. In her own respect, Sue Enquist here with Dave Meltzer on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.